Hello, and welcome to episode 8 of Inside the BDO, the podcast dedicated to the British Dance Organisation. My name is Andrew Sinclair, and on this episode, we've got some great stuff planned. First of all, there'll be a recap of the events in late May and early June in the BDO, including the trips to Gainsborough, Porirua in New Zealand, and Zurich. There'll be an interview with Helvetia Open winner and Scotland captain Alan Suter. And I'll be recapping a dramatic weekend at the redeveloped Selsey Complex, which played host to the England Open and National Singles events this past weekend, with a man many of you will know from Twitter as Oki Balboa. Chris and I will also be discussing the BDO's talented youngsters, Leighton Bennett and Beau Greaves, and the current situation regarding the World Trophy. The episode will then close with a preview of this forthcoming weekend and the rest of the month ahead as we move into July and the second half of the year. So what's happened since the last episode? Well, the Lincolnshire Open in Gainsborough at the start of June was the first of three European events since the last episode, and it was a quality field once again for the Category D event. Defending men's champion Paul Hogan went out in the last 16 of the event, falling to Tyneside's Paul Williams 4-3. The event overall was won by Graham Usher, somewhat of a surprise to some, but Usher was classy throughout the day. Beat Matt Padgett in the quarterfinals, form man Simon Stainton in the semis, and then he produced his best performance of the day in the final to beat Nick Fulwell 5-1. All six legs in the final were completed in 17 darts or less, showing the quality of both men, but it was Usher who came out on top, averaging 97.9 to win his first BDO title. Usher qualified for the UK Open 10 years ago now, but that win seems to have given him confidence. I've seen him very active on social media since then. And he played at the Selsey doubleheader recently, and it looks as though he might be playing more of the BDO circuit moving forward. Based on those performances in Lincolnshire, he'd certainly be a valuable addition. Over on the ladies' side of things, and the title was won by Anastasia Jabromislova. Anna beat defending champion Trina Gulliver in the semi-finals 4-0, and then she held her nerve in the final to deny Dieter Hedman a third title of the year with a 4-3 victory. It was unfortunate for Hedman to fall short. She played fantastically all day, but it wouldn't take Dieter long to get her third title of the year, as it came just the following weekend as the BDO made its annual pilgrimage to Zurich. Hedman, who had first won the Swiss Open 30 years ago back in 1989, won the Swiss Open again in 2019. She averaged over 85 in her semi-final win over Fallon Sherrick, and then she beat Laura Turner 2-1 in the final to take home the top prize. To her credit, Turner would get to the final the following day in the Helvetia Open, recording her second win of the weekend over Corinne Hammond on the way. And despite leading 3-0 in the final, Turner once again came out on the losing end. Fallon Sherrick won this time, defending one of her two titles won in 2018, winning the final 4-3 with a 77 average. Good weekend's work for all the women involved, and Hedman really seems to be finding some form after some concerns over her game at the start of the year. In Switzerland in the men's events, and it was Thomas Junghans, the home favourite, who shone. The Swiss-German thrower and former World Master semi-finalist won his second BDO crown in the Swiss Open, with a 3-2 win in the final over Dutchman Denny Alderkalter. Junghans is seen as one of the nice guys on the tour, and he'd been really impressive throughout the Swiss Open, so his win was really not much of a surprise. In the quarter-final, he averaged 90.7 against Wayne Warren, and in the semis, he topped that by averaging 96.8 against the Irishman Francis Carragher. In the final, Junghans hit 4 180s, including one in the final leg, to win the title and book a return to the World Masters later this year. Junghans then almost did the double the following day, only to lose out in a thrilling last-leg decider against Scotland captain Alan Suter. The game finished 5-4, and Suter, who was enjoying a rare weekend on the BDO Tour, was tipped by both myself and Hampshire's Gary Stafford to go well, did just that, beating Brian Roman, Daniela Petri and Jitse van der Waal en route to the final. It was Suter's first BDO title, and I caught up with the Scotland captain last week to chat his success, his involvement with the Scotland national team, and the work he's done for youth darts in Scotland. I am now lucky to be joined by Scotland captain and recent Helvetia Open winner, Alan Suter. How are you, Alan?
Good, thank you, Andrew. It's good to be joining you on your podcast today.
It's a great pleasure to have you, and as I said, you're fresh off your maiden BDO title win at the weekend. How does it feel?
I wouldn't say fresh after having to travel home and then return back to work the very next day. But today is okay, feel a bit better. But amazing weekend we had in Switzerland. We were hosted by very good friends, and I think that makes you relax and have a better time on the dartboard.
No, it certainly was some impressive performances from you, and it was a high quality final that you won against Thomas Junghans of Switzerland. You hit a big 150 checkout in the second leg and an 11 darter as well for you.
You always think you can play better, but yeah, it was a good final. But we are good friends, me and Thomas, so it's one of those games where you show respect, maybe sometimes too much respect to each other, and really you need to be there to win at all costs, or it should be. But I think maybe that's the reason I love the BDO, because friendship. And I don't think if you lose, it doesn't matter if it's to a friend or someone you respect on the circuit.
When he hit that 12 darter in the eighth leg, that big 127, did you feel nervous at all going into the final leg?
Yeah, I kind of thought, I've had my chance. I was 4-2 in front, and then he came back. And yeah, you do. I think at the start of a leg, you always think, it's okay. It's 5-1, both of us, so whoever has the best leg now wins. So even at the end of the last leg, we both, you know, Thomas missed 2 darts at double eight to win the tournament, to do back-to-back championships. So yeah, it's just, darts is always the old cliche, it's all on the day, it's all on leg by leg. So I was a bit nervous in the last leg.
Well, it was a tight game. You've played Thomas a couple of times before in World Championship qualifiers and stuff like that. Was he the best player you took on over the course of the week?
Oh, good question. Thomas is very, very, very focused. I think maybe that's more of a word than the best player. He's very focused and he wants to win. I did play some really great youth players for Brian Roman and the young Dutch guy in the semi-final. So, yeah. To say maybe over the weekend, Thomas was the best player of the whole tournament, both tournaments, so yeah.
You mentioned that you were hosted by some friends. What was it that made you pick Switzerland? Because obviously, some people may know, you work as a fireman, so you're quite busy and you don't get a lot of free weekends to play on the BDO Tour. So what was it that made you pick this weekend's event?
Yeah, it's absolutely nothing to do with the BDO circuit at all. Like you just said, I have to work and I have a good job, so I can't really dip my toe on the circuit hardly ever. Sometimes I go to events because friends are travelling as well, so we all go together from my area in Scotland. But this one was 100% because of Sven Gut. At the Europe Cup in Hungary, we struck off a friendship with the Swiss team, and he's obviously the Swiss manager now of the men's team. He invited me and Ewan and I to come across, so we didn't even have to think twice. We decided maybe 6 months, 8 months ago that we were going to be going to Switzerland. So it wasn't to do with the circuit or money or points or anything like that. It was a friendship thing.
Well, you mentioned Ewan Callender, your county teammate. He had a good weekend as well and went to the semi-finals on the Sunday.
Yeah, Ewan is a strong player. Ewan often beats me when it really matters in important competitions that we both want to win. Locally, it's always, we play in the same Monday night league, we play in the same Tuesday night league. We don't play in the same teams, but we're in opposite teams in these leagues. But we play Super League together, we play County together, and obviously we play for Scotland together. So we're always going to support each other when we're away. And for both of us to be standing before the semi-finals thinking, well, it could be Scotland final would have been quite good. But Ewan was actually leading against Thomas as well in a tight game. He was 3-2 up. I looked over and he was 3-2 up because they were only a couple of boards away. So maybe on another day Ewan could have made the final as well.
Well, it would have been certainly some spectacle if it had been the two of you in the final.
yeah, maybe.
You mentioned the money. How much did you win for winning the Helvetia Open title?
1,350 francs, so Swiss francs, so equates to just over £1,000 in British money. But it wasn't really about the money. I think Thomas won more for the Swiss Open's higher category on the Saturday. But, you know, we went out as all of us together with Swiss, with Dieter, with Paul Brown, with a few other people and had a meal. And we all chipped in and paid a meal off some of the winnings. So it's, for me, it's not about the money. It's never about the money. It's to win a title is the most important thing. To have a trophy, it's not important. The trophy stayed in the venue, stayed in Switzerland. So to be crowned a champion at any event's the main thing.
Well, that win guarantees that you'll be back at the World Masters later this year. You've You got to the last 16 a couple of times. What else is on the horizon for you this year?
Well, obviously, next week we're off to Holland to play the Six Nations for Scotland. So it comes thick and fast. So only a week at home, but because of my job, I have to work the next four night shifts just to be able to go to Holland next week. So busy, busy time. Also, in between that, doing the Darts Academy. But for me, probably no more of the circuit unless something appears that we maybe want to go to. But yeah, it looks like qualifiers, if and when they're announced, or sorry, World Championship qualifiers, which it might be this time. And the Windmill or the World Masters, as it would be called as well. So we'll have to wait and see. I have to wait on the BDO to do these deals and see where we are and what events we can play in.
Would you, I mean, you got to the semi-finals of the Scottish Classic last year. Is there a chance you'll be playing in that in August?
Yeah, it just depends on work. If I have enough time to get swaps or to move shifts, then I can possibly go to that. Because it's on the doorstep, it's only 1 hour from the house, then yeah, Scottish Classic's always on the radar if we can have time off work to go to it.
You obviously, with your work, you must have to plan, like this Switzerland one, you were saying you plan 6-8 months in advance. You must have to plan events quite a long way in advance. So I'm sure you can empathise with the situation a lot of players are in, waiting for information about the World Trophy.
Yeah, of course. I also run my county, so I'm the area organiser for Ancaster. So a couple of weeks ago, I was down at the BDO meeting. So I understand the frustrations, but I also understand the organising side of it, what the BDO has had to deal with over the last couple of years, where we've had to, how do we say, minimise damage and just steady the ship a little bit. So I understand both sides of it, but it is so frustrating. I also have to organise for the youths as well, so we don't know whether it's Bridlington, we don't know the World Trophy for the guys, qualifiers, it's a lot up in the air. And for me, planning it, announcements 4 weeks before or 8 weeks before is absolutely no use whatsoever. It makes it maybe even, for the first time a good few years, I might not be able to play in the Lakeside qualifiers or even in the Windmill, even though I've qualified. Because we need to know. We need to know in advance. We need a year, 2 year calendar that we can all look at. Especially people work, because most guys in the BDO work, you know this yourself. We're not professional dart players, so we have to plan around work and family and other commitments. So, yeah. It seems like it's getting better, but we still have to wait. The proof is in the pudding when events are confirmed on and where they are.
Yeah, I think certainly with the World Trophy, I think another thing that has to be brought into consideration is that they've announced who's qualified, and you think you've got representatives from Australia, Canada, America, but obviously they need to arrange to get here, and they don't know where they're going.
Yeah, it's not like you can just book a flight to London or to Manchester, because for anyone in the UK, yeah, we can travel. We can jump in a car or on a train and travel. But for these guys, yeah, it's no shock that last year at Lakeside, your Asian qualifier didn't take his spot. You know, things like this are going to always happen in the next year or two until they get hard and fast venues in the correct places and in enough time for people to plan.
I certainly think there are some issues, and we're running out of time for them to announce something. So hopefully we'll see some movement in the next couple of weeks. Talking of the next couple of weeks, you mentioned you're off to the Six Nations. Are you looking forward to that event?
Yeah, it's one of my favourites because it's so hard. It's one leg shootouts every time you go in the hockey, and you could be against the throw 3-4 times in your matches in your 5 legs. So it's so, so hard. But it goes back to, I played darts as a youngster in the pub, and you had to put your name on the board and mark, and then you played one leg and winner stays on. So it kind of goes back to that for me. It's like winner stays on. But at the same time, it's still doable. And for me and Ewan and Ross and Alan and Alec, it's representing Scotland. So playing at Lakeside is great, playing in the World Masters is great, but representing our country is the pinnacle in darts for most Scotsmen, I would say.
So would you say that representing your country is the highlight of your darting career so far?
Yeah, 100%. Way more than at Lakeside. I've obviously played Lakeside twice, and to give a bit of a reasoning behind it, Lakeside, you're you're playing for yourself, really. And if you lose, people, yeah, they commiserate you and things like that, and on social media, yeah, okay. But when you play for your country, everybody has a vested interest in that. So it's definitely the pinnacle to play for Scotland.
Obviously, you were in a Scotland captain. You played very well at the British Internationals, which were incredibly close this year between Scotland, England and Wales. And we saw the weekend you won the Helvetia Open the same day Scotland won the PDC World Cup of Darts. How do you feel the Scottish game is right now?
I think it's in a good place. We obviously have quite a few top players in the PDC. Obviously, Hendo and Rob Fortin, and even guys like Jamie Bain and Cameron Menzies, even down to the younger players, you know, Willie Borland and even Nathan Girvan doing a development tour and things like this. It's in a really good place. And as a nation, we have strong players. We have really strong players, but it's the same old adage of they have to play in the tournaments or they have to play counties to play for our country. Sometimes we maybe don't have the top 12 players playing for Scotland. So probably similar to England, you know, there's always a debate when the teams go up. Facebook and Twitter take off and, you know, it's why is this guy picked, why is he not picked and things like that. So I think we're a lot closer to England than for maybe the last 5-6 years anyway. Definitely it's a lot closer. And the Welsh guys, they've just found an extra 2, 3, 4 players that are consistently banging in 29-30 averages. So that makes it a lot closer at British Internationals, because sometimes there was results over the years of 10-2, 9-3, 11-1. So I don't think we'll see that in the next few years. I don't think we'll see that level of dominance from the English team especially.
And certainly, I think it was very close this year, and I thought Scotland and Wales were both very, very competitive. And I ask you about Scotland and sort of the state of the Scottish game, because you're obviously in a privileged position. Heavily involved with the Angus Darts Academy, very involved with the youth scene in Scotland, and you mentioned Nathan Girvan there, a phenomenally talented youngster.
Yeah, I have a place where I obviously can see everything, so I don't just play on the BDO circuit, or I don't just play for myself. I play darts because I love darts, but I also get a lot of exposure to youth darts. I get to see not just Nathan, there's 5, 6, 7, 8 Scottish youth players that are coming through, but obviously I get to see the English kids, the Welsh kids, and then Europe Cups, World Cups, we get to see even more talent from around the world. Just even in Switzerland at the weekend, watching the youth event, watching some of the young guys from Switzerland, there was incredible games on the youth boards, and you just stand back and think, yeah, we talk about Leighton Bennett and Nathan and all these kids all the time, but there is so much talent in Europe and around the world that it's great to see. I love watching youth players play and be scarily good, so it makes adults and the senior players stand back and go, whoa, they can play just as good as me, and he's maybe 13, 14, 15, you know, so I like that side of darts.
I mean, it must have been a massively proud moment for you when at the British Internationals, all four of the Scottish youth boys were from the Angus Darts Academy.
Yeah, I think that's since 2012 when we started the academy. We had one boy in the Scotland team, and then we had one boy the next year, then we had two boys. And it was always the thing that we thought, we have a few players coming through that were only 11, 12 at the time. You think maybe in 1 or 2 years' time, these guys, John Galazzi, Conor Mitchell, they can be good enough to be in the four boy Scotland team. So yeah, probably, like I say, playing for Scotland's important. It's the most important thing for me. So to captain my country is amazing, but to also have four from my academy is the entire team for your Scotland is, yeah, it doesn't get any better than that. I don't think we can ever, even if we have four boys in it next time or the time after, I don't think we can ever match the pride that it gives you to do that.
Of the crop of boys you've got at the moment, obviously Nathan's the oldest and he's the one who's got the most exposure, having got to the World Youth Final this year, quarterfinal of the Scottish Open back in February. Do you think he is the one who at the moment looks like he's got the most potential to go to the very top of the game?
Yeah, I think in the last 2 years, because of the two times at Lakeside and playing for Scotland, the player of the tournament and all these accolades he's had, I think that's pushed him in a place where to be signed by Target Darts and to be signed by Matt Ward at MDA, that just pushes Nathan into a different level from all the other boys. if you can get roles in Scotland, even in the UK, because they're always on the lookout for fitting. It's always messaging about Nathan. He's always making sure everything's okay and if we need anything. So yeah, that pushes Nathan to a different level. We have other children, we have other youths that can get to Nathan's level, but it's they need the breaks, they need to make finals, they need to play in all these bigger events inside the BDO. And obviously with Nathan now doing PDC on the development tour, that again should push his level higher. We'll wait and see. Obviously he's only a few tournaments in, so we have to wait and see how it affects him and how his performances change. You know, for our county, Nathan is one of the players that everyone thinks he's one of the best players in our county already at 16 years old. So yeah, I think it's wait and see how it goes, but I think Nathan is the one that has a chance to make it. He's at the age of leaving school, so he's now in a period where darts might become a really big thing for him.
Certainly, he's been very impressive the times I've seen him, and obviously he's still a growing lad and still to, yeah. I mean, he's still only very young in his career, so yeah. The sky really could be the limit for him. And you mentioned Target there. Target and the Royal Bank of Scotland have been very helpful in helping you with the Angus Darts Academy over the years with some financial help, but also boards and lighting setups and so on.
Yeah, the academy is something that I think any time you ask anybody for help with youth darts, it's so much easier than like for myself, even if I tried to get a sponsor or to go on the circuit. I think it would be a challenge. I think I could do it, but I think when I ask for the youths, it just seems to be no problem. And Target has been phenomenal, but I've known Darryl for a long time, and as soon as he was put in as in charge of the youth setup in Target, I knew straight away when he wanted Nathan to go with him, I thought, yes, this is brilliant for Nathan, but it can also be brilliant for our academy. But I just think everybody helps youth darts. We're just going through a period now where we're going to take the boys that are in the Scotland team to Gibraltar for the JDC World Cup, which we played in last year. We've been doing a bit of fundraising, we've been looking at sponsorship, but the last two things that have just happened have been crazy, with Gary Anderson donating his shirt from last year's World Cup, and he put it on an auction that went for £725, and Gary then says, right, okay, I'll match that amount of money and give it to the boys. So that's just happened. And then on the back of that, Joanne Peter, Snakebite Wright's wife, got the board from the PDC from the World Cup final the other night, got both the guys to sign it, and then they gave the board to our academy for the four kids to go to Gibraltar. So we've put that on Twitter, and it's sitting at £900, and it has interest from, believe it or not, pro sports, from other sports. Scottish golfer Mark Warren, who plays on the circuit at golf. Yeah. He was messaging saying, I really like this, tell me what's happening and let me know. And he's keeping an eye on it, and there's bids going everywhere for it. So for things like that, for senior players to step up, I suppose I'm a senior player and I do things for youth, but for these guys that are the big stars who have way more exposure on Twitter and social media and even on TV, for these two guys to do this, it's been absolutely amazing. Gary's been a friend for a long time, obviously, but Peter is jumping on the bandwagon and being part of it with the Scottish Youth Fair, so amazing.
That's fantastic to hear, and all the help they can get to keep growing and keep developing their talent is fantastic. Yeah. You mentioned doing the circuit yourself and kind of to bring everything full circle. Yeah. Is doing the circuit maybe full-time for a couple of years something you'd like to do in the future?
I think I spoke to someone yesterday about this. I think at 41 years old, maybe too late for me to do these kind of things. Before 2010, Barry Anderson offered me to sponsor me to go to the BDC to pay for everything, Q School, and then sponsor me for a year, and I turned them down and says, I can't, sorry. And that's probably because I have a good, secure job as a firefighter, and I would have to probably leave that job and say, right, I'm going to go full-time at darts, but then that's a huge gamble. Mm. Because I can't just go back to the fire brigade and say, knock, knock, can I have my job back, please, if it all goes wrong? I think I'm more of a social fun darter. Mm. Yes, I can play darts at a certain standard, and I know this, and I know I could be one of the best players in the world, but I think if you take it as a job, then it maybe changes a bit, and you have to be a lot more dedicated and serious. So would the Youth Academy still be part of my horizon? would I still be able to commit all the time I do to that, all the time I do for Angus darts, for Super League darts? You know, I run all the darts. So I sit in the house on a laptop, on tablets, and create events and set up all the Super Leagues and county things. So if I'd done this, I would have to maybe stop doing all that. So I don't think it's a thing I would ever do. I just don't think family life, home life, looking after the youth is probably more important to me than myself going on the circuit and getting in the top 16 to make the World Championship. So I'd rather take my chance through the qualifiers and give some people that think they're better a bit of a scare.
I mean, that's very commendable. And obviously, working in the fire services, it's an incredibly vocational career option. And it must be something you're very passionate about doing as well, to want to stick with it.
Yeah, well, it's one of those jobs where, yeah, we have time off, but it's something when we do what we're paid to do, you do go home feeling, yeah, I'm glad I've done that. I'm glad I'm in this job and we can make a difference to people. You know, we can save people's lives pretty much every single time we go to work. So it's probably the best and most rewarding part of the job. So to do darts as a job and maybe pick up a few pounds just because you play darts is not you wouldn't have the same feeling of the team ethic that we have and also the pride we have at serving the community. So yeah, I think that's probably why I've been in the forces and then I've been in the fire service. So I've been in the same kind of job my whole life. So,
well, certainly incredibly commendable, and to manage to win a darts tournament in Switzerland in your spare time is not bad going at all, is it?
If I have some spare time, then I'd love to play darts. So yeah, so it's all good.
Well, Alan, I can't thank you enough for coming on. It's been incredibly insightful talking to you. And I wish you all the best for the rest of the year, be that with County, Super League, Monday night, Tuesday night, maybe Scottish Classic, whatever it may be. Thank you so much for coming on.
No problem, anytime. Thank you.
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed that chat with Alan, a lovely man, and it was fantastic to hear the work he's done with youth darts in Scotland, but also his kind of refreshing take on doing the BDO circuit and whether darts was a worthwhile full-time career option for him when he does something so fulfilling and so vocational with the Scottish Fire Service. Fantastic player, and I hope he is able to get to the World Masters and the World Championship qualifiers later this year, because on his day, as he showed in Zurich, Alan really is a match for pretty much anyone on the BDO circuit. Now it's time for another instalment of Bouncing Around the World. Since we last recorded, we've had events in the USA, Canada, Australia and New Zealand. I'll start with the USA. We've had one ranking event in the US since I last recorded, and then that was the Oregon Open, a BDO ranking event for the first time this year. A lot of the top US players were busy with the CDC Tour events, which were the same weekend, which meant the door was open for new names to take centre stage and put in some impressive performances. The top seed and most recognisable name for fans in the event was Kevin Luke, the former Las Vegas Open winner. But Luke exited at the last 32 stage of the Category D event as Patrick Kithy won his first BDO title. The averages in both the men and the ladies competition, which was won by Rene Ripoll, weren't particularly impressive, sort of in the high 60s, mid 70s. But it doesn't really matter, to be perfectly honest, because Kithy did enough to win the event. It was nice to see some new names in the winner's enclosure, and both Kithy and Ripoll have earned their places at the World Masters later this year. Moving into Canada, we've had the Canadian Open, which was a Category C for the men and B for the women just last weekend. Results have been a bit slow to come through, but in the men's event, the victory went to Jeff Smith. The Silencer beat David Cameron in the final, and it was a really good weekend overall for the former BDO World Championship finalist. Smith won the mixed doubles with Dana Foster, and he booked his place at the WDF World Cup later this year. Not bad work for Smith, but Cameron, although he lost in the final, also had something to cheer about, as he becomes the first name locked in for the World Championships next year. It will be his seventh time at Lakeside, and that comes by virtue of the fact Cameron is top of the Canadian ranking table, and there are no more events left this season. Fantastic work from Cameron, and as he showed at the World Championship earlier this year, he's a phenomenal player, capable of beating some of the very best. Over in Australia, we've also had one event, and it was a first win of the year for Gordon Glenn Mathers in the Sunshine State Classic. Tournament was played in Brisbane and Mathers was fantastic throughout the day. He beat Mal Cumming in the semis before meeting four-man Jeremy Fagg in the final. Fag's been playing some fantastic darts across Queensland and Australia recently, and he opened well in the final with a 130 checkout for a 12 darter, but Mather showed slightly better consistency. He responded well and averaged 96.3 on his way to a 7-6 win. That books Mather's a place at the World Masters later this year. And over in the ladies' side of things, it was the New Zealander Wendy Harper who came out on top. Harper came over from New Zealand to play in the event, and she actually beat home favourite Tori Kuish 6-4 in the final. New Zealand, we've had two events which have made the race to qualify for the World Championships in 2020 a lot clearer. First up was the Canterbury Open, and there was Darren Heroini to take the top prize. Heroini strengthened his grip on the top spot with a second tournament victory of the year. Were 45 men entered for the Canterbury Open, and in the end it was a battle between Heroini and Jonathan Silcock, with Heroini emerging victorious 6-4. Jonathan Silcock would also go on to reach the final of the Puma New Zealand Masters just this past weekend, but again he came out on the losing end of the final, this time going down 6-2 to Tahuna Irwin. It was talented Irwin's second title of the year, and I sincerely hope that he's able to sort out the visa issues that stopped him from playing at the PDC World Championships at the back end of 2018, because he'd be a fantastic addition to the World Masters. He's an incredibly talented young player, and I'd love to be able to see him mix with some of the best, really. In the ladies' side of things, in the New Zealand events this month, Tina Osborne won the Canterbury Open ladies' title, beating Jo Steed 5-4, whilst Harper continued her recent success in a rematch in the New Zealand Masters final, beating Tori Kuish once again. So some great form from Wendy Harper. And with very few events left now for the New Zealand region, ahead of the end of the season, Darren Heroini has a comfortable lead at the top of the leaderboard. So it looks as though we'll be seeing Heroini at the World Championships next year. And he'll be a fantastic addition. He's a big power scorer, a good finisher, and he's showed at Q School earlier this year, he's more than capable of mixing it with the big boys. The biggest event since I recorded last has been the Selsey Double Header. The venue was renovated for this year, and I have to say it looked superb. There was some cracking action over the 3 days, highlighted by Beau Greaves winning all four singles titles available to her, and also the prestigious ladies pentathlon. To talk about that, the world trophy situation, and a bit more besides, I spoke to Oki Balboa a couple of days ago. So, Chris, thank you for joining me. What did you make of the Selsey weekender that we've just had?
Part of it because I was elsewhere on Sunday, and again, England Darts produced these good, really good events, and it streamed really well, and it looked like it was well organised, and everybody seemed to give positive feedback from it. So all in all, it was really good.
The redeveloped venue certainly looked quite impressive, and the star of the show really was Beau Greaves, wasn't it?
It was certainly. I mean, she won or was runner-up in practically everything she entered during the weekend. I mean, she won the pentathlon, she won the two senior titles, the two junior titles. Fantastic, fantastic performance, really.
And I think, obviously, she is still only 15, but I think it's not only the fact she's entering these competitions, being competitive and picking up titles. It's the fact she's pretty much dominating the senior ladies that have seemed almost untouchable for a number of years now.
Yes, absolutely. And her demeanour just shows that I just get out there and play my darts, and if I win, fantastic. I don't think she don't care who she plays. She just flows the same and just acts the same, just like, oh, what a match. Which is good to be in because sometimes you can think, oh, I'm playing a legend here. I'll try and flow a bit differently, or I'll try and approach it differently, and that doesn't quite work. But she's quite mentally strong already at the age of 15. It's incredible, really.
I think certainly that Sunday, obviously she was supposedly not feeling particularly well on the Sunday, but
I heard that she had a nosebleed or something, and that to put the change the schedule a bit because she had to go to hospital or to be checked out by a doctor, and thankfully she was all right because she produced some great darts at the end in the final day, including beating Leta Bennett.
Well, certainly. I mean, she came out, beat Rhiann Griffiths in the England National Singles Final. Obviously, Rhiann's a Welsh international. She's played at the World Championship before. She then came back, beat Shannon Reeves in the girls' final, beat Leighton Bennett in the mixed final. And then in the England Open, she saw of Aileen de Graaf and Fallon Sherrick. Not a bad hit list for an afternoon's work, really.
No, not at all. Some really good players she's beat there. And she takes it all in a stride. It's just quite impressive, really.
But I think the highlight of her weekend for me was the way in which she beat Mikuru Suzuki on the Saturday, averaging more than 90 against the world champion.
Absolutely, and to do that to a world champion in any format, in any stage, at any standard, is incredible. And she totally dominated the match. And it's not like Suzuki played poorly. She didn't. She just outplayed. Just fantastic performance.
She's now moved herself into periphery of a world championship position. It'd certainly be a great story if the 15-year-old was able to make it to the world championship at the start of next year.
It'll be a fantastic story, and this is somewhere where the media will have to market it really well and have to put it all out saying we've got a 15-year-old in a world championships and you know, do all the necessary things to get the media interest.
From a marketing point of view, not only would she be 15, not only would she have qualified, she will probably by then have beaten almost everybody in the field anyway, so she'd certainly be within a shot of even winning the whole thing at the age of 15 as well.
Absolutely. Again, from memory, I don't think she's... If it is at Lakeside, she has played at the Lakeside stage. Oh yes, she has. At the World Masters a couple of years ago, she lost that game. So, you know, that could have been a factor. But, it'd be interesting to see how she does if it's at Lakeside. Or anywhere, really.
She played Leighton Bennett in the mixed youth final. What have you made of the performances he's had on the tour this year?
I'm not surprised. I'm glad he's playing a lot of video events because he will learn a lot more than the JDC. That's not to say the JDC doesn't offer anything. It clearly does. I'm not surprised about his results, but watched him at the Welsh Open and he looks pretty much the real deal. But I think people have to throw caution. He's only 13, and we take it year by year instead of trying to make plans like he's going to be a world champion, he's going to be better than Donatella, and things like that. You have to keep taking it year by year with him, because anything could change, and that includes Bo as well.
My main concern with Leighton, obviously, he's had some tremendous performances. He's got deep to a couple of big events. But I think my concern, certainly when you see him going over and playing the doubleheader in Poland, for example, is that he's going to burn himself out. And he obviously, he's so talented and so young, you don't want that to happen.
I've been told by various people, or I've heard from various people, that he's got a good management team behind him. So hopefully they'll know what he needs to do and what they expect him to do and over tournaments and things like that, because hopefully the management will do good for him.
Certainly.
I don't want to jump on the bandwagon because he's only 13. I don't think it's fair that and as I said before, we're all making plans for his future. By saying he'll win this amount of titles, he'll do this in the PDC, he'll get a tour card at 16, whatever. You have to play it year by year and see how he is. In 5 years' time, if he's tearing up the PDC or whatever, then you think, fantastic. But at the moment, year by year.
Also, I mean, he's 13. You think he gets older. How many successful youth players have we seen in recent years even who have got to a certain point and they've just fallen out of love with darts? So
absolutely. I mean, the first Lakeside World Youth Champion is a martial arts boxer now. So, and that's what he really went like 4 or 5 years ago. His name escapes me. He beat Harry Ward. His name escapes me, but he's not playing darts anymore because he went to the PDC and it was obviously too early for him. And obviously, he lost his interest in darts via that. So therefore, he's moved on to something else. So that's what people have got to understand, that sometimes people do things too early, or people expect things too early, and sometimes they hit a plateau. It happens in all sports, to be fair, not just darts.
hopefully, I mean, he should probably will have a good management team behind him, given the success he's had. And you hope they're going to guide him in the right direction, because he is 30 and he is quite clearly incredibly gifted. So hopefully he'll be moving in a positive direction. On the topic of Selsey, the men's competitions, how good was it to see Jim Williams back in the winner's enclosure again?
Fantastic, because he's one of the better players in the BDO, that's without doubt. His year, really, he had a great black side, he went to Q school, he had a good 3 days, it looked like he was going to get a tour card. Then he had a very poor fourth day, and it sort of affected his confidence. Regardless of what he said in the Metro during the week about him not really caring about tour card, I think that's a bit of bravado, I think. But he's certainly showing his class, and hopefully he can go on from strength to strength.
Certainly was good. He played some cracking stuff and picked up quite a comprehensive win. But, it almost looked like he wasn't going to do it. He was trailing to Wesley Harms in the semi-final and had to really pull it out in what was another good weekend for Harms.
Yeah, Harms has been the most consistent player on the tour at the moment. I mean, he's getting to it. He's won 5 tournaments. He's got to 3 finals from memory. So he's been the most consistent player. Again, he's somebody that when he gets onto the stage, you think, can he do it? And that's what he needs to. He needs to bring. So when he plays in the World Trophy, the World Masters, the Grand Slam, and Lakeside, he's got to perform a notch above, and basically bring his floor form onto the stage, because he's capable of 9,500 averages. That will put him amongst the winners.
I think I'm obviously a big Wesley Harms fan, so.
Yeah.
I've always been quite a big believer in him, but I think this year he really has been the one who has seized the mantle of Durrant and McGeaney not being there, and has shown some consistency, reaching a lot more finals, semis, and winning titles than he had before. At the Denmark Open, when he beat Willem Mandigers, he averaged 105 in the final. In his England national singles win over Wayne Warren, he averaged almost 100 as well. I think if he can step up, this might be the time. He actually realises the potential he thought he had all those years ago when he was saying that he was the best Dutch player walking the planet.
He's showing, as well, I've said at the start of the year, it's between Harms, Venstra, Mitchell and Williams to be the battle for the world number one. They're holding their own battle at the moment, and that's what they should be. And Harms is clearly in front. I think he's 39 points ahead on the seasonal table, so he's doing a good job.
It was nice to see Wayne Warren make 2 finals over the weekend. He's someone who plays a lot of events. His drought on the BDO Tour is now 7 years, but he was fantastic over the course of the weekend, showing some real consistency, and he's now up to a career high in the BDO rankings of 6th.
Yeah, he has. Wayne Warren's been playing the last few years due to he's got a sponsorship with Paul Brown, and that certainly helped him get on the tour and doing a lot of doing a lot of events, because for years he was always the guy that people feared when he was there, because he was such a very good player, but he didn't play enough events to get to Lakeside or to the stage events of the World Masters or whatever. But he's converting that now, and he's playing week in, week out, and he deserves to be in the top 10 because he's one of the better players at the BDO. So good luck to him.
I have to agree with you that, and he's certainly a character as well. Was there anyone else who particularly impressed you over the course of the weekend in either the men's or the women's competitions?
Well, David Evans had a good run. He got to the semi-finals of the Nationals. He's somebody that he's won a Challenge Tour event, and he's always been fairly decent. So, again, would he be playing enough events to try and qualify for Lakeside? I don't know what his agenda is. I mean, there's going to be so many Challenge Tour events coming up in the next few months. It's up to them if they want to try and qualify for Lakeside or because if they can play in both and everything. Richie Edhouse played in the weekend, and it's really good to see people who played on the Pro Tour now are playing on the BDO Tour. I think he's the third one that's done it this year. I think Portillo and Andy Hamilton have as well. So it's quite weird when you see people on the pro tour playing on the BDO tour as well. It's good for darts, I think.
Certainly, and I think with regards to David Evans, he certainly impressed me over the weekend. He got to the semis of the England Open as well, and he's now on the rolling table into the top 25. And given that he doesn't have many points to defend between now and sort of the end of the season, I think he's well positioned to actually qualify for the World Championships this year. And with the fact that he's one of the players on the tour who he's more or less full-time, if he isn't full-time, I know he's signed up with Red Dragon and so on, he is someone who could really, I think he's starting to find consistency in his game, and those Challenge Tour events with the rest of the year to come will put him in good stead for the remainder of the year on both circuits, I think.
Yes, and it's what he wants to do. Would he think, oh, I'm getting into the top 25, 30 of the media, I've got a chance to qualify for the World Championships, do I go for that? And I suspect he will, because, you know, he's been playing quite a few events, and it's not like he'll be banned or anything like that anymore. So you know, he's got a good chance. He's in with a good shot on the Challenge Tour as well. So he's another one. There's a few other players as well. I mean, and Clear Mike didn't really have a threat. Did he get to the quarterfinals of the English Open and the English Nationals?
I think he got to one quarterfinal and one last 16.
In previous months, but he's another one that's really dangerous, and he's another player that's come along the rails in the media, like Hunter Buckner last year and Danny Novak a couple of years ago. You're always going to get these probably Euro players who are going to come along in the media and just shock everyone, thinking, well, who's that? And he's come along and he's in the top 10 already. You're going to get one of that. You're going to get players like that. He's another one.
Yeah, another couple for me that stood out. One was Gino Voss, who had a tour card about 5 years ago, and he did nothing in the national singles and then got to a quarter final of the England Open. He's now into the top 25 of the rolling table, and he's a quality operator as well.
Yes. Well, Gino Voss came to Providence about 2010 when he beat Hanke in the World Masters. I think he lost Adams in the following round,
certainly, he's an impressive player, and it's the second time in a row he's actually done really well in a UK-based event as well, which is slightly different for some of the European players. And I think it was the Welsh Open. He got to a quarterfinal or a semi-final. So he's in a position where a lot of the lower boxes on the table for him are quite low, because he's being topped up by big performances at the Czech Open, the Welsh Open, and now the English Open as well. And the other person I wanted to give a mention to was Sam Head, who actually played at Lakeside a couple of years ago, has had a number of shoulder injuries and has not been able to play much. But he had a couple of good runs in Estonia a couple of months back, and he actually got to the last 16 in the national singles as well. So although he didn't stand out, it was nice to see him back amongst the points and throwing some good darts again.
When he was very young, he was highly rated, and of course he's had his injuries, and fair play for him for coming back from shoulder injuries is very difficult. Fair play for coming back from his shoulder injuries and actually coming back and actually playing quite well. So again, he's another one. We're waiting to see what he does at the rest of the year and see if he can get into the, see if he can have a good rise and get to the top 30 or have a good run at the World Masters or whatever. So, he's another one to keep an eye out.
In general, as always with England Darts, it was a well-run weekend with lots of updates and streams and so on.
English Darts organisation, well, the English Darts, now not EDO, but English Darts, they run it a lot better than what the VDO themselves do sometimes. They seem to put them to shame with their setups and the way they go about things and the tournaments on and the streaming and everything like that, and they're actually quite innovative within the media, and they, as I said, they put the BDO probably to shame a little bit. So in recent years, I'm glad they're still running a lot of events, and I'm still glad that 200, 300, 400, 500 people are turning up, and long may it continue.
Talking of the BDO not running things particularly well, that brings me on to the note of the World Trophy.
Oh, yes.
And we still know a grand total of more or less sod all.
It's downright embarrassing, because we've had Des come in with his promises of trying to change the BDO. I'm not doubting for 1 minute that he's trying, but it seems a bit flat, and it seems a bit that it's almost the same as it was under the Williamses. Nothing happening, no news, players not knowing, players asking and not knowing. I mean, I've had two players inbox me on Twitter asking, do I know anything? I mean, that's bad. And one of them's in the top five. So, you know, that's bad. And the communication is still lacking. I mean, there's no venue or anything like that. They should come out and say, we're trying to get a venue sorted. Once we get it, we'll let you know. At least people keep in mind saying, oh, they're trying to get a venue. But now, it's 74, 75 days to go, and it's going to be impossible for it to be sold out. Impossible.
Right.
I think you might get a situation at Preston where there's me and about 20 other people in the final watching. People don't want to go through that again, but it looks like they're heading towards it again, and that's really, really sad.
Well, I agree. I think if they were going to struggle for a venue, I know he wanted to try and go somewhere different, perhaps go up north somewhere.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if you were struggling for a venue, I know it wouldn't be ideal, but playing it in Bridlington or the Lakeside or somewhere, getting it announced would allow you to do marketing, do your media, get tickets sold, and it's the least that the players deserve, especially when you think that they've changed the format back for the World Trophy this year, so you've got all the international qualifiers, you're expecting Dave Cameron to come over, you're expecting Justin Thompson to come over. Those airfares are not cheap, and you need to book them well in advance. They can't afford to leave it much longer without those players perhaps having to turn the opportunities down.
When you consider that the Australian Open, that's going to be happening at the start of that month, August, and that was announced months ago, and they got Mitchell and Williams in, so that was done well in advance, so Mitchell and Williams would know all about that, and they've already arranged all that. These guys are still in limbo land, and it's not fair, because they have faith in the BDO system, they have faith in the WDF system, you know, as well. And they deserve, when they're top of the rankings, they deserve to be rewarded with TV events. And because of all this, they might think, well, I can't go because it's going to cost X amount of money and I won't be able to justify it. And it's not fair.
The fact they've got the TV deal with Eurosport, I think, certainly complicates things, because if it was in the situation before where they had no TV in place and the TV was then a last-minute scramble to try and get something, you'd understand. But this year, they've got the TV deal in place. That should, you'd have thought, offer them some leverage to get a better venue and to get things done early, because it's going to be on TV. And we all know TV cameras, TV production crews do not like empty-looking venues.
No, definitely not. And you always think that they would get... It's quite hard to get a venue, but you think they'll get a venue where they think, even if it's for 500, 600 people, a full arena looks good, regardless how big it is. I'm surprised that nothing has happened, and it's shambolic. There's no other word to describe it, and it's like it's like Groundhog Day. We all say it every year, World Trophy. At least the amount of days to go, nothing's been announced. Is it going to be on? Is it going to be off? And it's no good. It's not good. And Eurosport must be thinking, what the hell is going on? Because they've signed a 3-year deal with them, and there are these events coming up in late August, early September, and there's nothing. There's absolutely nowhere to hold it. There's no idea about qualifiers, because there's still four players in the men's and two players in the women's who need to qualify. who need to go through a qualifier. It's just bad. It's just really, really bad. And there isn't a BDO board. Have to put something out pretty quickly. And you know, even a contingency plan, perhaps moving it, I don't know. Or perhaps they can't cancel it, because to cancel it would be really, really bad. Or perhaps do something, or perhaps change the format for 1 year and have it as British and European based. I don't know, but they need to do something very quickly.
I can't agree with you more. I think it's a shameful state of affairs. I think the qualifier is the thing that a lot of people will have slept on and forgotten, in the fact there's still no venue, there's the dates are there, but there's no announcement of format, how those days are going to work. There's none of that. I think the qualifier, the problem they have now is that there are no British events, what with the International Open being cancelled and the Wolverhampton doubleheader being cancelled. There's only one British event before the World Trophy is supposed to be, which is when you would normally do the qualifier, and that's the West Midlands Open, literally the weekend before, and there's very little room in that venue to be able to do a qualifier unless you're shafting a large number of people.
Yeah.
And one suggestion I've heard from a couple of people is that they're going to have to do it, in theory, the tournament's supposed to be Friday, Saturday, Sunday. The suggestion was the qualifier would be on the Thursday night. Also, when you think how busy August is on the BDO calendar as well, you've got the West Midlands Open, as said, you've got the French events back on the calendar this year, you've got Sweden, you've got Antwerp at the start of the month. It's going to be a busy old month, and people don't have that much money to enter a qualifier on a Thursday night that, if there's, say, 128 people, only four are going to get through. You might have to potentially take 1 day off, maybe even 2 days off work, for something that feasibly you're going to earn no money for, and you might get nothing out of, for a tournament that might end up being played in front of 25 people, which isn't great at all.
This side of that, it's on TV. So you got a chance of being on TV. But again, I agree. For the casual darts fan, they're going to think, not interested. When it was at the Welsh Open last year, there was a lot more people that entered, because, you know, even though it was on a Friday, people knew that the Welsh Open lasted from Thursday night to Sunday night, and they knew it was going to be in that package. But now it's just all a bit, holding on a first note. Yeah. I can understand it, but they probably should have done it in the first place. They probably just said, yeah, it's a 3 day event, but we're holding on Thursday night. Here's the package deal.
Yeah, I think even if they'd done it this past weekend in Selsey, there would have been time to fit them in. So you had the ladies there for the pentathlon on the Friday, so you could feasibly have done it then. You could have done the men's at the same time. And you had more than 500 people enter to play the England Open. That would have been a very, very competitive qualifier.
It would have. But again, I don't think the media would have done it on an EDO event. So there's that to consider, which is a little bit of politics, but there you go. But yeah. Even though the relations between them two are much better than they were last year, I can tell you, it's just bad. It's just a farce, regardless of what the format's going to be, where it's going to be held, and things like that. It's just people who are sceptical of the BDO are laughing. People who hate the BDO are laughing. Even I'm going to start to laugh, because it's just farce. It's just a farce, and it's a crying shame for the players.
I couldn't have put it better myself, mate. And it's a shame to end on a sad note, but it's been lovely having you on again. So thank you.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me. I've enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah, it was great to talk to Chris about kind of the very sad World Trophy situation, but also the action in Selsey, which really was impressive. Of course, Beau Greaves stole the headlines, but it was nice to see Jim Williams pick up a first title in almost 8 months, especially after he spoke with the Metro last week and was complaining, well, not complaining, but referring to his loss of ranking points and the difficult start he's had to this year. Jim really is one of the most naturally gifted guys in the BDO, so it's nice to see him finding a bit of form, and he's now back up to second in the world ranking, so hopefully he can kick on through the remainder of 2019. The other leading BDO player to talk to the Metro last week was Carl McKinstry. Of course, the Selsey doubleheader was a big weekend for McKinstry. He came in defending both his England Open title, but also 61 ranking points. Unfortunately, McKinstry, who claimed in his interview with the Metro that on ability, he was one of the six best players in the BDO. It's a statement that I'm not sure what I think about. I think he's flattered to deceive on many an occasion, showing form in small patches, but often not perhaps having the consistency to make deep runs. McKinstry got to the last 32 of the national singles and the last 64 of the England Open, meaning he lost 50 points on the latest ranking tables, which drops him to outside the top 40. As the Northern Irishman doesn't play many events on the BDO Tour, certainly gives him an uphill battle to reach the World Championships next year, which definitely would have been his ambition after reaching the quarterfinals this year and then not going particularly well at Q School the following week. Well, what's next on the horizon in the world of the BDO? Well, we've got four events this weekend, ranking-wise, and of course the prestigious Six Nations. In terms of the ranking events, well, we've got the Austrian Open Vienna, obviously in Austria. It's a good quality Category D, and at the time of recording, there are 177 men registered for that event and 29 for the ladies' competition. Last year's events were won by Roger Janssen and Veronica Ihash, but unfortunately, Janssen hasn't entered this year. I'm not particularly sure what's up with Gizmo, who had a really fantastic 2018, winning both this title and also the Luxembourg Open, I think it was, the back end of July. He then went well at the World Masters and also at the World Championship when he won Jim Williams very close in the first round. But Janssen's barely played this year. Perhaps he's taking a break from the game. Perhaps he's you would have thought he's not financially tight after winning those two events, playing a lot of the tour last year and, of course, doing well at the World Championship. But my hunch is that he might be entering European Q School next year. I think he showed incredible form and great scoring. And he definitely has a shot at the Q School. And I wouldn't be shocked if, like Andy Barton's and a few others, he's just not doing the BDO Tour events this year because there's no need to earn the points. He's already qualified for the World Trophy later this year, which still remains to be seen whether it's actually going to happen or not. I'm pretty sure it will, but we don't know. But he's still entered for that. But it's still a shame to see him not on the tour because he's a player I rate very highly. As for the men's event, well, who stands out? Well, Mikhail Unterbuchner, the German, is the top seed and, of course, the name a lot of people have their eye on. He's not set the world alight in 2019. He's not won a title. He's still not actually won a second ranking title on the BDO circuit since the Swiss Open last year. But he will be the top seed for the event that he's got to the semi-finals of twice before. Beyond him, you've got John Scott, who obviously did the double in Estonia earlier this year and has been one of the form players in 2019. As well as the Irishman Francis Carragher, who's coming off some great performances in Switzerland. Jeffrey Van Egdom of Belgium, who showed at the Dutch Open this year what he's capable of, but has so far blown a bit hot and cold and not really been consistent enough to pick up top points. And the dangerous Austrian Hannah Schneer. Schneer obviously went well at the Czech Open at the end of last year. He's qualified for a couple of PDC European Tour events. And at a home event for Schneer, I think he's definitely one to watch. Over in the ladies' field, it's not the deepest, as I said, only 29 entered. But standout names for me are Andrea Brad, the Romanian, Kaisu Rekkonen of Finland, who's won a number of titles in the past, and also Jana Kanovska of the Czech Republic, as well as defending champion Ihash of Hungary. We also have the Category D Cherry Bomb International this weekend in Deerfield Beach, Florida. Rick Pyers won the men's competition last year, with Joe Chaney reaching the final. There aren't many chances left for players to catch Chaney in the race to the World Championships, with only one event left after this, and that's the Witch City Open in September. Chaney will be amongst the favourites, but there are a number of talented Americans playing darts at the moment. With no CDC weekend, expect to see the likes of Leonard Gates there, challenging for top honours once again. Over in Australia, and we've got the Australian Grand Masters. It was a Category A last year, but this year it's been downgraded to a Cat B. 2018's events were won by Peter Machin and Corin Hammond. But with a lot of form players at the moment, I think the men's competition in particular could be wide open. My tip at the moment would be Jeremy Fagg or Justin Thompson. Fagg's won a number of regional titles in Australia so far this year, and he's really picked up his form in the BDO event. So I think for me, he's the one to watch. But of course, Tomo is the top-ranked Australian in the BDO, and he's also been fantastic this year. But again, beyond them, you've got the likes of Peter Machin, Mal Cumming, Adam Rowe, and of course, all the players that have been playing the DPA events in Australia as well. In the ladies' side of things, a win for Tori Kewish could move her back into the periphery of World Championship qualification, which would be fantastic because, as I've said before, Kewish is someone I'd love to see qualify for the World Championships. And the final ranking event this weekend is the LDO Ladies Classic in Gainsborough. It's a Cat B event this year, having been upgraded from a Cat C last year. And 2018's event was won by Lisa Ashton. Hopefully, with no other major BDO events this weekend and no challenge tour or anything, should be a really good field for the event in Gainsborough, and hopefully we'll see some changes to the rankings as a result of it. And the big non-ranking event of this weekend is the Six Nations. It's always a great comp, and this year it's been played at the Bonteveva in Assen in the Netherlands. It's a lot of strong teams, but my tip is the Dutch outfit. Here are the teams for this weekend's Six Nations darts, which should be streamed through Winmar TV and YouTube. So the England team will be Scott Mitchell, Nigel Hayden, Martin Atkins of Wigan, Paul Milford, Daniel Day, Fallon Sherrick, Lorraine Winstanley, and Maria O'Brien. For the Netherlands, you've got Martijn Kleermaker, Willem Mandigers, Jeffrey Spyridons, Chris Landman, and Wessel Nyman. And for the women, you have Aileen de Graaf, Sharon Prins, and Anke Zylstra. Northern Ireland will be represented by Kyle McKinstry, Neil Duff, Chris Gilliland, Paul McDonald, Gary Elliott, Grace Crane, Kaylee O'Neill, and Helen Dunn. The Republic of Ireland will be represented this year by Keith Geraghty, Niall Cullerton, Martin Hennigan, Trevor Vallely, Andrew Ryan, Anne Redmond, Robin Byrne, and Linda Hart. The Scotland squad comprises Alan Souter, Ross Montgomery, Ewan Callender, Alex Jeffrey, Alan Small, Emily Davison, Susanna McGimpsey, and Louise Hepburn. And the Welsh team finally is Jim Williams, Nick Kenny, Mark Layton, Darren Bingham, Arwin Morris, Rhiannon O'Sullivan, Chris Savary, and Anne-Marie Potts. Some really fantastic talent on offer there. Scott Mitchell, of course, will be leading the charge for England, and you'd argue that England certainly have the strongest ladies contingent playing this weekend. But for me, in terms of the men's teams, obviously Jim Williams and Nick Kenny have had fantastic years in the BDO. Alan Souter's a phenomenal player, as I've said before, as is Ewan Callender, who actually got to a semi-final in Switzerland as well. And as Alan said, could quite easily have been an all-Angus affair in the Helvetia Open final. Obviously, for Northern Ireland, you've got the likes of Kyle McKinstry, Neil Duff, Chris Gilliland, all very, very good players. Republic of Ireland, I think, are the team that most people know least about. But Martin Hennigan, beyond Hennigan, as I said, him and Geraghty are the names that stand out. But I think they might shock a few people. But overall, in terms of making a pick, I think England are probably strongest on the ladies' front, followed by the Dutch and then probably the Scots or maybe the Welsh. But in terms of a men's perspective, it is very hard to look beyond the five-man tandem that is Kleermaker, Mandigers, Spyridons, Landman and Nyman. All incredible players, phenomenal finishes. And if you look at the form that Kleermaker and Mandigers have shown, I think the Dutch have got to be favourites, especially with that home crowd. But should be a fantastic event, certainly at the Bonteveva. The Dutch know how to do their darts events and should be some fantastic streams and coverage over the weekend. Beyond that, well, what else is in store? We've got the Gold Cup, which is one of my favourite events, as I've said on an episode before, and the Champions Cup at the end of the month at the Magna Centre in Rotherham. But July is quite quiet. The Welsh Weekender and the Wolverhampton Doubleheader are both off the calendar, which means there's very little action next month. We've got the Europe Cup Youth event in Ankara, Turkey, from the 10th to the 13th of July. And then you've got the BDO Youth Festival of Darts the following weekend in Colchester. The next ranking event isn't until the Luxembourg doubleheader, sponsored by 180, at the end of July. So a fantastic event. Obviously, everything went well last year. It was back on the calendar last year. There's a number of great players going to be playing in that event, already signed up. So that should be a really fun return to action. And then follow the same weekend, actually, is the Japan Open. Japan Open's upgraded to a Category B this year for both the men and the women. No doubt motivated by the rise of Mikuru Suzuki, who now finds herself 8th in the ladies' rankings. It'll be interesting to see the Japan Open this year. Obviously, if Suzuki can win that, she'll be increasing the points she's already got on the table. But also, who triumphs in the men's events? Still not clear if we're going to have an Asian representative at the World Championship next year. I think we will, but I'm not too sure. But even so, should be a great event over in Japan, and hopefully we'll be able to get results from that. Thank you, everyone, for joining me on this latest episode of Inside the BDO, the podcast. I hope you enjoyed my chats with Oki Balboa and, of course, Alan Suter. And as always, if you have any questions or queries or just anything you want to say, give myself a follow on Twitter at AMSinclair97 and give the podcast a follow on Twitter at Inside the BDO. Until next time.